Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Mira Software Services, 1,500 software professionals specializing in machine-to-machine and the Internet of Things platform. Details at mera.biz or 650-479-5350.
You're listening to Geek Speak on 88.9 KUSP. I'm your host, Bonnie Jean Primsch, and in the studio is with me is Lyle Troxell and Ben Jaffe.
We covered some stories over the last year about how in the light that the NSA and other organizations try to make backdoors into systems and have been doing a lot of damaging to security infrastructure choices, there was an idea that it might be a really good idea to take TrueCrypt, which is an open project, and just analyze it, really give it an audit, give it a software audit.
I remember us talking about this.
Right.
Yeah, it could use a little once-over just to make sure that everything's okay.
So there was a call to get some funding. They got funding. They did a once-over. The first pass looked good. And then the other day, on the 28th of May, a giant warning showed up on the TrueCrypt website.
Uh-oh.
That said, using TrueCrypt is not as secure as it may contain unfixed security issues.
Oops.
So basically what's happened is the people that are running TrueCrypt decided that it's important to stop using it, which is kind of catastrophic for the security community because we've been relying upon it. Now, this is definitely a breaking story that keeps on moving forward. It's only been a few days, but it's definitely probably a precautious thing, and you'll see an alternative come about. But right now, it's very possible that TrueCrypt doesn't do what we hope it was doing, which is protecting you completely. So once again, your data might not be as safe as you think.
This appears to be part of like an overall trend of actually, guys, stop relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was the LavaBit thing, too, the email provider who basically the government came knocking at his door, and he had to suspend service because he couldn't say why it was a big kerfuffle.
So the solution that TrueCrypt people have decided to do, the recommendation on the site, is to go ahead and use a service called BitLocker, which is a Microsoft owned service that is built into Windows 7 Ultimate, I believe. And so there is an alternative, and they've given instructions on how to migrate over, assuming of course that you're in a Windows environment. So in any case, we'll keep abreast of the story as it progresses.
Oh my goodness,
I don't like that story.
I mean, the thing is, I don't use TrueCrypt. No, because I'm not as, scared, concerned. I don't know.
Well, I don't either, but I do think it's very important that these tools exist so people can use them. It's kind of like if you don't put a lock on your door because you don't really care, that doesn't mean that locks are suddenly irrelevant from your perspective.
Right, right. Additionally, on a Macintosh environment, File Vault, which is Apple's solution, does a very similar thing and is probably secure.
Probably.
Well, the weird thing about this is you really have to trust where the software is coming from. And the great thing about open source is everybody can look at the source code if they want to, if they're able to. And
there's a chance to double check that trust.
Of course, there's thousands of lines. And
it's hard. It's
Apple
really complicated.
File Vault, the reason why I'm not always recommending people do it is that the people that are in my life that might want to encrypt their drive, if they have a catastrophic problem of like forgetting their password, there is nothing I can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when someone says, what should I do to protect my data? I don't always say encrypt your hard drive. I kind of go, oh, do this, this, and this. Because I know that if all else fails, I might be able to do some recovery for them and get the data back on their drive. Yeah. If they've done FireVault or TrueCrypt, forget about it. It's gone.
Yeah.
You can't help.
If you forget the password,
humans are really good at forgetting things, too.
Yeah. What were you saying?
What are we talking about? Well, that might be where the piece of paper in a drawer comes into play.
Oh, geez.
We're back to that conversation. You're listening to Geek Speak here on 88.9 KUSP. And in a moment on the show, we're going to talk about the petite and adorable, by the way, self-driving car, the one with no steering wheel. There's no chance to even try driving this car. It's also the last day of the station's pledge drive. This is a membership campaign to make sure that we can be on the ground and running right at the beginning of the next fiscal year, which is coming right up here. This is how public radio stations like KUSP raise money to keep the station going, Ben.
In this age, you can get news about science and technology from so many sources, and you probably have your trusted sources. I certainly have mine, /dot, the Bad Astronomy blog, a couple others. But technology and science reporting is abysmal in this country, so here on GeekSpeak, we try to separate the techno spin, as it's called, from fact and marketing hype from reality.
Mm-hmm. The real value of this program, like so much of what you hear on KUSP, is that you can trust you're getting the straight story, at least as told by the geeks. It's certainly a uniquely valuable program with measurable benefits in your life, and it certainly warrants your financial support, I think. Please make a contribution now that we're in the last few hours of the drive. Lyle's about to tell you how you can do that.
That's right. We're ending the pledge drive at 1 p.m., and so it's time now to step up and contribute from your budget. You decide how much to give. If you care about public radio and if you care about KUSP, we urge you to come in from the sidelines. Make your 11th hour pledge now at KUSP.org. It would be a shame if you missed this opportunity to help maintain the news, entertainment, and music programs that add to the quality of your life. And it takes only about 2 minutes to help at KUSP.org.
And you can join the people who have already offered their support in that 2 minutes to the station, like Peter in Brookdale, thank you, Julie in Santa Cruz, James in Scotts Valley, Marcia in Capitola, Judy in Aptos, and Sharon in Royal Oaks. Thank you all so much for donating.
Thank you.
So for over 40 years, KUSP has been on the air, and during that time, we've expanded our broadcast reach to cover the Central Coast region of California. KUSP.org has been around since the web was young, and
that
now
website.
has tens of thousands of visitors from around the world.
And is an award-winning website. It got an Edward R. Murrow Award. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, we at KUSP have continued our tradition of bringing you high-quality news coverage and signature local cultural events like the Cabrillo Festival of Contemporary Music. I'm looking forward to that. The Monterey Jazz Festival, that's going to be awesome. The Carmel Bach Festival, we've loved hearing that over the years. This campaign is your opportunity to ensure that KUSP will continue to be an important part of your life in the coming months and years. Please make your gift now.
Offering your gift takes just a couple minutes. Please do so at KUSP.org.
No one's really certain of the exact date, but I'm pretty sure the first radio pledge drive was staged sometime in the late 40s or early 50s.
Makes sense.
And it's also been documented that the first complaint about a public radio pledge drive happened a short time later. I mean, we get it, right? I mean, but I have to say, this has been working. For decades, public radio fundraising professionals have searched. Believe me, we would also like a better and more efficient way to raise money.
But after years of experimentation, we found that the pledge drive remains unrivaled in efficiency, attracting first-time donors and reminding long-time members to re-up their commitment. So we are as eager as you to return to the usual program schedule. Your contribution now will take us one step closer to that goal.
The purpose of this campaign is to make sure KUSP's income stays ahead of its expenses. Now, we're about to cover a story, about to get back into content. We're going to talk about the Googled self-driving car and what's happening with that. And while we provide this program to you, your contribution will ensure KUSP remains on the sound financial footing that allows us to deliver the programs you expect. Think of this campaign as an election, and now's the time to make a gift of whatever amount you choose while we're talking about the self-driving car. You can do so at KUSP.org.
All right. Now, we've been hearing about self-driving cars for a while, Ben, but the images of this one has just come out, and it's just the cutest little thing on the planet.
It is so cute. It's like a smart car, but cuter. It looks...
Oh, my God. It's adorable.
We're looking at a picture of it right now. That can be a geek bit, too. We'll put a picture up.
You got to see this, you guys.
On our website, geekspeak.org. But it's cute as a button, and it really looks like something out of Disneyland in a way. It's so the really strange thing about this vehicle, and this is a Google self-driving car that they're working on, and they're building some prototypes. So they're super, super scaled down, and a couple things about it. First of all, they have only two seats and a little space for belongings and a button to start and a stop.
Where's the cup holder?
Right. No, you hold your own cup.
Okay.
And a screen that shows you where you're going, and it doesn't have a steering wheel. So there's a video of these two people, and the kid is a woman and her kid. The kid is sitting in the driver's seat, but what makes it a
driver's seat.
So it's kind of like a Disneyland ride. You know, you get in and the car just goes.
Yeah, and you got that the way that you direct it to go is you pull out your smartphone first and you say, I want to go here. On this app, and the car then takes you there.
It's not even
you don't even need controls in the car. Also, the storage area for your pets and stuff, yeah, that's in front of you. Just kind of around.
So it's just an accessory to your phone.
Yeah.
A couple other really cool things about this. They're electric powered. They'll have a range of about 100 miles. They're going to build about 100 of these prototypes this summer. And, I mean, who knows when it will be safe to go on the road and all
the
legislation
and
stuff. But without a steering wheel?
Yeah, they're legal in California right now.
Wait, without a steering wheel?
Oh, that's
25
right.
miles an hour maximum speed.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Hey.
Yeah.
And one other thing is there's a whole bunch of foam in the front that's under the hood. If you open up the hood, it's mainly foam. Because if you get in an accident, that's fantastic to have a bunch of foam between you and the thing you're crashing into instead of this crazy thing.
It's also a giant roll bar cage and seat belts, by the way. It's not like, here's a car that controls itself and here's a pillow.
It really does look. It kind of looks like if you take a ginormous egg and then you just chop it in half.
It's a George Jetson car. I mean, come on. It doesn't fly.
Give it an
George
implied
Jetson
face. Yeah, it's so. Oh, God.
It's cute. It's amazing. And
well, I want one.
You could like drive it 100 miles and it goes pew, like, oh, you get out and you get another one and keep going.
I love this. I was chatting about this vehicle and my partner says to me, oh my gosh, I could help the kids with the homework as we went commuted back and forth from school. Yeah. I said, no, you can stay home. The car can go pick up the kids from school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whoa. Blow your mind.
I love the idea that maybe there are a million people walking around in a city and then there's maybe 1/10 of that number of cars. And those cars just go and pick up whoever needs a ride, and they don't belong to anyone. I love that. I love that feature.
No parking.
Parents of preteens are going to be the first round of customers for this.
Oh, yeah. I want a car. Yes, you can have a car.
Okay.
Yep. I want to drive it. No.
That's so excellent. Well, it's interesting because a lot of times on this show, we talk about things that are memorable, but in Germany, people are asking to be forgotten. What's that about?
Yeah, it's a really interesting concept. There's actually ideas about this in our legislation as well, but in European Union countries, there's quite a bit of desire for this idea that a human can be private. And therefore, privacy is a very difficult and challenging task in a digital age where everything is remembered. You know, when you make your AT&T account, you know, for your phone, whatever, and then you decide to go over to Sprint, AT&T never erases the data about you. Why would they? They had it at one point. They own the information about you to some degree, even though it's your information. So the question is, if a corporation kind of lives forever, and you have data that kind of gets bought by companies and used by companies, it can persist forever.
And it's expensive and difficult to erase data.
It
especially
is.
If you think about, like, I comment on your Facebook post and then you delete your account. What happens to my comment?
Right.
You know, it's
really complicated. Absolutely.
Really complicated.
So there's laws in Great Britain that and Germany and all over the EU, actually, but Germany, the stories we're talking about now, that basically says a human being actually has the right to be forgotten. They can request that their data be purged from a corporation. So that law, along with Google's ability to index the internet, has come in a collision, and a judge has ruled that Google and any search engine has to be able to abide by this law with a request to be forgotten from indexes of their content on the internet. Now, the way that Google and Yahoo and all these search engines actually work is they crawl through websites, finding pages, taking all that information, adding into this giant indexing system, which is what is responded to when you do a Google search, right? Mm-hmm. You do a Google search, their database is looked up, and then the request gets responded with different entries.
So basically, if you were to search on person who asked to be forgotten, then Google would look around and find things like, oh, is that the person? And then there'd be information there that says, this is not the person you're looking for.
Now, Google in the U.S. has always claimed that when we do an index, all it is a lookup. It's just factual information. We found this information at this location. That's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
The judge said, you know what? Google has to forget that they have that entry. It's like asking a library to erase their index cards.
Wow.
Now, Google doesn't actually have control over the website, the actual book. The book's still going to be there. If you know how to get to it, you can still get to it. They just can't point to it.
Okay.
So it really breaks the model of how the internet works. It's kind of a bad situation. I don't like it a lot. In the first day of the service being turned on, Google received 12,000 requests from people seeking to be forgotten. And the trouble with this is that you can use the idea of being forgotten as a site of censorship. If I don't want Bonnie to be known, I can just submit something to Google in Germany that says, forget Bonnie Jean Primch.
Oh, no.
And then all of a sudden she's gone. So they have to confirm that I'm the person that is responsible. You know, I'm me.
Oh, that's
so there's extra
another
steps
hard
involved.
Problem.
Right. So
then they have to do it manually or like how?
Right now this is just a form of request and then they're figuring out what to do. So Google, which happens to have really intelligent people working there, is trying to figure out how to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a serious problem.
It's going to take the hive mind. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. I mean, they are saying very clearly that they will not erase information about public figures. They will not erase information about crimes. So you can't purge stuff that is important to the public record. You know, there's this idea that some data is more important to society at large than to the individual's privacy. An idea of this is, you know, we have an index for people that have sex crimes in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, Google could not index that stuff, right,
mm-hmm.
if they were being requested. But they're basically saying, look, that information is something that's the society's decided should be public, and therefore we're going to keep it.
So some things will supersede a person's request to have something forgotten.
That's right. Another example is a bank executive, you know, that laundered money or something, and then that person later wants to start up a new business in another area. You want to make sure that the information about them being convicted of a crime is still public so that you know not to hire them, of course, by the laws and everything. So anyway, it's a really big problem. Google's being asked to do exactly what they can't, what they don't really want to do.
But so Google didn't say, hey, guys, we're going to make it possible for you to be forgotten.
No, Google went to court and fought for this and lost.
Okay. All right. So then they were saddled with 12,000 requests that they were not prepared for.
In the first day. It's probably a lot more now.
Oh, man.
Okay.
And the other thing is that they are abiding by this in Germany. So when this happens and they start doing it, they'll erase the data indexing for Germany. But if you go somewhere else and you look up that person, it'll still be there.
Okay.
So it doesn't really achieve anything because it's actually really quite easy.
You can just write to your buddies in Spain and go, can you help a guy out?
Or you can use a thing called a VPN, which is a virtual private network, to pretend like you're in Spain. And it's really easy to do that.
Proxy,
so
yeah.
It's a lot of work that will amount to nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe.
Fun times.
Yeah.
Well, we're asking you to do just a little bit of work that will amount to a whole lot. This is our pledge drive here at KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak on 88.9 KUSP. I'm your host, Bonnie Jean Primsch, and in the studio with me is Lyle Troxell and Ben Jaffe. And in a moment, we're going to tuck right back into the news about watching a mainframe being created.
Mm.
We're volunteering our time now, guys, to bring you this program. And that's true of many shows at KUSP. It's also brought to you by listeners who put something into the hat. You can see where this is going. We believe that's a business model that emphasizes the content rather than just earning money for the station.
So we focus on great content brought to you by volunteers that have a passion for the radio we make. Here on GeekSpeak, for example, we focus on the technology that affects the public. We're here at the station doing this show because we believe in our programming, the news and information about how technology changes our society and affects your life.
Right. And we're free at KUSP to devote more time every hour to news, for instance. That's because we don't have to set aside 12, 15, or even 20 minutes per hour for commercials.
That's right.
That's why you can hear about a whole lot of geek stories in 1 hour here on GeekSpeak. This alternative approach to broadcasting flows directly from listener support, from contributions from people just like you. And guys, an important deadline looms. This campaign is nearly over, so we're hoping that you're going to make that procrastinator's pledge right now. Go to KUSP.org, click on the red half circle that says donate. Guys, there's just 2.5 hours left of this drive, and some people have already done so, Ben.
Yes, you all. Oh, yes. So we have some thank yous. We have a thank you to Janet in Watsonville, yeah. Barry in Capitola, Donna in Santa Cruz, Jackie in San Martin, Martha Ellen in Carmel, Lynn and Rima in Santa Cruz,
oh, nice.
And Idalia in Salinas. And those are all at the end of Dr. Don. And we have some GeekSpeak contributors. So thank you to Judith in Santa Cruz, Jamie in Soledad, Kent in Los Angeles, and a anonymous first-time contributor in Pacific Grove. Yeah, so consider what you could give on a monthly basis. Little amounts in your credit card adding to a lot of great support for the station. Most listeners give it $10 a month. That's about 1.5 burritos is the way I like to think of it. Is that something that you can do? If you can do it, do it. So help thank the station that makes GeekSpeak possible. Give at KUSP.org. You'll be all done in about 2 minutes.
We make the airwaves available for everyone, even though we know not everyone will contribute money to the station. But you can. Your budget has a little room in it. And you already know that giving to KUSP is a good idea, or you wouldn't be listening right now. So now it's just a matter of picking an amount to give. Like Ben mentioned, $10 a month. How about $20 a month? That's what I do. And go ahead and give that. Give online at KUSP.org. And know that when you do, you're really helping us out and your fellow listeners too. So go ahead. Please take care of that now. We really appreciate it. Thanks.
So if you've spent any time riding the rails in Europe or India, as I have, mm-hmm. sooner or later, you will find yourself part of a captive audience to a musician who moves from train car to train car. And whether or not you like the performance, when the hat gets passed, everybody on the train watches out of the corner of their eye to see whether you donate.
Well, no one is watching you. Well, maybe the NSA, but don't worry about that.
No, yeah.
You don't have to contribute to KUSP. We'll keep making great radio and hope that you will participate with a contribution to help make it happen. We only ask that you donate an amount that works for your budget.
Right.
Now, right now, to make your donation, whatever amount you choose, whatever works for your budget, KUSP.org.
It's GeekSpeak here on KUSP. Lyle, you've got, you know about a film about making. What do you mean,
you know,
a film about making?
I saw this morning, and it's just fantastic. So an ESS mainframe, this is a machine from the 70s, 80s era, I believe. Okay. And these are all wired by hand, lots of wiring. They're basically the infrastructure of telcos. And there's this wonderful film directed by Carl Ballard, Never Cry Wolf and The Black Stallion are other films of that director.
Okay.
And the title is called The Hello Machine. Now, the Hello Machine used to be the nickname for a telephone. And, of course, Alexander Graham Bell didn't like the idea of hello. He really thought you should answer the phone with, what do you got? What do you think?
Ahoy!
Ahoy! That's correct, Bonnie. I knew you'd know that. I knew it. And so, but in fact, Thomas Edison idea, of course, won out, and that stuck, the telephone, and that's what we have now. But the Hello Machine was actually the nickname for a period of time, and of course, that's because you'd answer the phone and say hello. The protocol for telephone calls is hello. In any case, this is a wonderful film. It's more of a poem. There's no vocals.
I see.
There's just music and people making really cool technology, wiring cables.
Tribute.
Yeah, it's a glorious thing. And this is called a Geek Bit because, of course, you have to go to geekspeak.org to see what the heck we're talking about.
It's a visual thing.
It is.
How long is it?
Oh, you know what? Good question.
Is it like 5 minutes, 20 minutes? What are people in for?
This is going to be an 11-minute and 29-second film.
Manageable.
Manageable.
All right. So after you've made your pledge of support to KUSP, you could check that out. We'll have it up after the show at geekspeak.org.
You betcha.
That sounds great. Now let's have something terrible.
Oh, I have
something
terrible.
Ben. All right, Ben, what do you got?
Here's my story. This is so disheartening to me. So far this year, we have had 288 cases of measles, totally preventable measles, which we almost eliminated in the United States. And that's just the cases that have been reported by the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Is that a lot?
288 is a lot. That is, so it's only been, it hasn't quite even been 5 months. This is reporting from January 1st to May 23rd of this year.
Okay.
And 288, that number is already higher than the total cases reported for any year, going all the way back to 1997.
So what's going on?
And also that number, that being higher than the total cases all the way back to 97, that includes last year. Last year, the cases were triple their usual average. So this is horrible because we have a vaccine for this and it's totally fine. The reason that this is happening is because people are not getting vaccinated as much anymore.
No.
And there are a number of reasons and none of them are science-based. And especially in Santa Cruz, I know there are some people listening. If you aren't vaccinated or if you don't want to get your child vaccinated or yourself vaccinated, all I ask is not to trust me, but to take a skeptical approach, search for, quote unquote, the other side, you know, read up on the science behind it, and then make your decision, because there is almost no reason that you shouldn't get vaccinated. Maybe if you're immunocompromised, most people who don't vaccinate are not immunocompromised, or if you're very, very, very young or otherwise. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's my sad story. This is a 20-year high of U.S. measles infections, and I really hope it doesn't go up any higher. I hope that people start preventing these preventable things.
So this is I'm not sure what the moral of the story is, that when there is well-established tech available that's fairly accessible, please use that tech.
Yeah, this is why we have science. This is why we have medicine, you know, is because we can trust it. And we can't trust our brains to take a non-emotional approach to things.
Yeah.
So if you give someone a sob story and you give someone hard data, mm-hmm. and the sob story is totally fictitious, they will be persuaded by the sob story, not by the science, right? So we like to think that we're rational, that we're logic, very good at logic, but really humans are quite bad at it. So go out and do the research yourself. Don't take my word. You don't have to take my word for it.
What's your opinion, though?
Get vaccinated.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. All right. Unless a doctor tells you not to, do it.
All right. So that's tech that's available that we should use. It looks like some people are making a case that well-established tech that people have been thinking of as high status for a long time should not be used.
Are you speaking of college?
I'm speaking of college.
Yeah, you know, you hear...
Is it worth it?
Yeah, you hear that, like, current graduating college students can't find work. They struggle to find work. And you find out that they're overqualified for jobs that are actually available. They can't find jobs they're qualified for. And that student debt, meanwhile, has, like, gone up to $1 trillion in the U.S., right?
Yeah.
So the
obvious... Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was that high.
It's pretty bad.
That's a country budget.
So it's obvious that there's this question of like, well, is it really worth it to go to college and make all this debt? Now, last week, I suggested that memory is kind of obsolete. We don't have to memorize anymore. I got a lot of flack for that. And I don't know if that's the best way to sum it up.
We had a long discussion.
I'll backtrack a little bit
on
that.
You got flack for that.
I think I said something else, but I can't remember. In any case, so the question arises, is college worth it? And truth is that a new Economic Policy Institute study from in Washington, Americans with a 4-year college degree made 98% more per hour on average in 2013 than people without a degree. 98% more.
That's double, right?
So it's – yeah, exactly. So it's really quite – well, it's a little bit less than double, actually. That's per hour. Per week, it's completely
different. Come on. It's so much easier to say almost double.
I know. But 98% sounds like a lot.
Oh, yeah.
To me, you know.
Well, yeah.
Any case – and that percentage a decade earlier was 64%. So only, Ben, how much? About 50% more.
What are you picking on me for?
That was the 1980s. So clearly it makes a lot of sense to go to college from that perspective.
Sure.
And in fact, if you take a look at how much college costs you, the amount of time you're not making money during the period of college, mm-hmm. and whether you should get a degree or not, the lifespan of your life, for example, a college person will make $500,000 more than a non-college person, like even with the fees of the college and everything.
Is the uptick in money you're making worth the uptick in debt you're accruing?
Right. So if you look at your lifespan, the average lifespan, you actually, if you avoid college, you are losing $500,000. If you go to college, you're getting that money. And so that's humans, the difference over lifespan.
And of course, humans are really good at short-term thinking. Yes. But yeah, so if you plan to die at 30, don't go to college. If you plan to live a nice, long life.
Well, there goes that idea.
Now, I also think that our current university system, I've worked there for years, I think it's fantastic. There are some downfalls and some problems and all of those things. But when it comes to making a step to decide who you're going to be as an adult, that's a really wonderful time to do that.
Yeah.
And I think there's different ways of doing that choice.
There's also the world travel route.
Right.
Which costs money.
Yeah.
But can you still hitchhike and things? Is that still
you can do that,
happens?
But you really want to go to college at one point.
You can only hitchhike in certain countries.
Oh, really?
And there's some countries you really don't want to hitchhike in.
Okay. Right. We'll just be vague about that and leave you wondering.
Google it.
Bring you nice data. It keeps me.
All right. So college, your net analysis, Lyle, college worth it?
Yeah. In fact, you have to you're paying $500,000 to not go to if you don't go to college, you're losing $500,000.
It's still worth it.
Okay. You know, an interesting thing about this though is the stuff that you learn, that the knowledge that you acquire at college, you can acquire that online for free. So it's not so much about the knowledge. It's not so much about.
I agree theoretically, Ben, you can.
Gets you the higher salary. Is that still true?
Well, there are other things. There's experience, right? The experience of going through college. That's another. I'm not trying to oversimplify this, but if you want to learn computer science, you could learn just as much, maybe potentially even faster, if you just self-study and you were good enough at self-studying and everything, right? But
are
it's
you
not
looking at me as an example of that because I didn't go to college.
Hey, take Lyle here.
Oh, you didn't go to college?
I have an associate's degree. I went to Cabrillo, sure. Yeah, I went. I
so you went to
degree.
College. You just didn't go to university.
That's right.
Okay.
But I think that the point being that right now the structure in place to make sure you study for a long period of time and actually get the skills necessary to make this extra money and actually be more successful in life, twice as much salary right out of college, you need to do that right now. The structure to do that is at a university and or at college, right? I don't think the online learning for an 18-year-old is the right path to go. I agree that some people are like that and not everybody's the same. But if you look in mass, the average, you want that degree.
And it also depends on what area you want to go in. You with your associate's degree, Lyle, are making so much more money than I am with my 4-year university degree.
I just have to say, though, Bonnie, that I didn't start doing that for 15, 20 years, right? So I have an associate's degree and I got out and I did a little job that paid that kind of level.
Yeah.
And then over the years, I trained myself. So I think that it's better to say that if you want to make good money out of college, you need to go to college. If you want to wait 12, 15, 20 years, then you could do my path.
Right. And moms, dads, help a kid out and start saving up.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking to parents. All right. You happen to be one, so yes, I'm talking
to you. Good. I like it.
It's Geek Speak here on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Primsch in the studio with Ben Jaffe and Lyle Troxell. And in just a moment, we're going to talk about the pledge drive, and we're going to take a little lesson from another figure in public broadcasting.
LeVar Burton? Anyone recognize him?
Sure. He's fantastic.
He is my hero. He was on Star Trek, and he taught me to love books. Like,
those what more could you want?
Yeah. So LeVar Burton of Reading Rainbow, he and his team are working on making a digital collection of book information and video field trips for children everywhere. So the idea is, instead of tuning in at whatever o'clock to this station to watch 1 hour of Reading Rainbow, it'll be available as an app, as a website, all of that stuff. So that's the dream. So they started a Kickstarter, and in a day they reached their goal of $1 million.
What?
Wow.
And in 4 days, so as of now, they've raised over $3 million, and they have a stretch goal of $5 million. So over the next couple days, we'll see if they meet the $5 million. They said if they meet their stretch goal, 7,500 classrooms will get access to all of this stuff for free, and they'll be able to provide it and everything. So that's kind of amazing.
That is amazing, because at KUSP, we offer our programming every day for free to anyone who wants to listen to it, and we are asking for far fewer contributions during this drive.
That is true.
So what that tells me is we have every chance of being highly successful in this campaign.
Yeah, we know it is physically possible to donate to support KUSP because...
How do we know that?
The following people already have. Ah. Thank you to Keith in Aptos, Rod in San Francisco, Anonymous in Aptos, Carmel, and Scotts Valley. So that's three people. And a special thank you to Lois in Santa Cruz, making her first gift to KUSP.
Welcome.
Yay, welcome, welcome.
And she says she loves Geek Speak, and she says she's feeling generous today. Woo-hoo. So thank you very much, everybody.
Boy, that generosity of spirit is what is going to make this world keep going around.
That's right.
I'll tell you what. You know what? In a minute, we're going to ask if it's possible for real meat to be vegetarian. But right now, let's talk some more about raising some money for KUSP. Listener support makes up the largest source of funding for programs like Geek Speak. Your donation will keep KUSP free of commercial and special interest influence. You can make that 11th hour gift right now, because there are only 2 hours really left of this drive. Choose the sustainable monthly option, which is what I do, at our website, KUSP.org.
You know, this program airs live every Saturday morning in the Monterey Bay area on KUSP, and all you radio people are listening right now are hearing it that way. But you may also be someone who listens to NPR podcasts or visits GeekSpeak online and geekspeak.org and listens that way. And it's you, the internet fan I'm talking to right now. You already know what a great resource this program is. You found it. It's part of your feed. You're listening to it regularly. And that, even in the world of NPR podcasts, there is nothing quite like GeekSpeak.
You know, right now, I want to make sure you understand what makes this program special. We depend on the financial support of individual listeners so that the podcast is available to you. So instead of keeping advertisers happy, GeekSpeak focus is on you, anyone who's listening, exactly what you would expect from your own educator or your own tech consultant or your own childhood hero for reading.
And this is also why GeekSpeak can shoot straight on bigger issues like privacy and security. The only agenda here is to help stay out of trouble in a world that is fraught with hazards and junk science. If you like what you hear, we're counting on you to support GeekSpeak with a contribution. Bonnie is about to tell you how to do that.
Yeah, I tell you what, it can feel like a big decision, right? But it's actually pretty quick and easy.
Yeah.
You just go to KUSP.org. You can do that. You can go to a website. You click on one of the things on the homepage there. The thing you want to click on is the thing that says donate. And then you just fill out a 2-minute form that follows. And if you're a fast typist, it will take less time. And then warm feelings follow. You can brag with your friends about being a hotshot philanthropist, just like the 1%.
So you understand that KUSP brings something special into your life, and we're honored that you choose us. During this campaign, we seek your partnership in the form of a donation that will assure that KUSP can continue to connect you to the news, the ideas, and the music that you care about.
Listen, we're honored by any contribution you're willing to make. Truly, truly. What matters to us is knowing that you're there, listening, and also helping us in a material way right now. We're serious about not requiring a specific amount from anybody. We know when everyone who can do something does do something, it'll just add up to what our budget needs. We're not worried about how much you're contributing. what we're paying keen attention to is, when will you do your bit for KUSP? I mean, the suspense. Just picking them out. Weigh in. All of us who are fans of KUSP have already done our part and are just waiting for you to join us. Give at KUSP.org. We can't wait to thank you.
Now, you may find that you're listening to KUSP on less radio and more mobile devices or on your computer or maybe an internet-dedicated radio. Mm-hmm. And years ago, we understood that KUSP had to be wherever you wanted us to be. And so we've made the investments to expand and improve our online identity at KUSP.org.
But this relatively new way of reaching you comes with an additional cost for us. It does take people. It takes bandwidth and equipment to keep a website running smoothly.
Yeah.
And by making a contribution to KUSP now, you're helping us meet our costs of serving you online on your mobile device.
Yeah. We're talking about two-minute philanthropy right now, just 2 minutes. Less if you already know how much you'd like to give. And here I'll help you with a suggestion. Add up what you spend on like some form of entertainment in a given month, right? And that is probably how much you can afford to support KUSP. So you look maybe at your cable bill, or you maybe look at, oh, I go to a movie twice a month. That amount of money, that's what we're talking about, right? It's something you already are spending on your entertainment and your education and your enjoyment of life, and we just ask that you do the same with us.
Make your last-minute contribution at KUSP.org.
You know, did you know that listener support is the single largest source of KUSP's operating funds? More than business contributions, more than foundation grants.
Certainly more than governmental support.
I don't think it's even the budget.
It doesn't even register.
Public radio is paid for by listeners like you. The only difference between you and the listeners that pay for it is the phone call they make to pay for it. Mm-hmm. So this campaign is your opportunity to do that right now. Take a small share of responsibility for ensuring that public radio will continue to be here. Become a member.
So because you're listening now, because you know you can afford something, thank you for going to the phone right now or going to the website right now and making that gift. And if you're listening on the podcast, those funds will help us as we move forward into the fiscal year. So if you've been inspired, please do act on that inspiration.
Now, we've heard a lot about stem cell research on the program. In fact, mm-hmm. every story that's about stem cells since stem cells started becoming an actual treatment thing, we've covered on GeekSpeak. Curing blindness in mice and then trials for humans. I mean, some really amazing things. But this one's really exciting to me because as a child of hippies, I've always felt dual purpose on my desire to eat meat because, of course, it's a sacrifice of an animal. Now, personally, I actually raise chickens, and yes, I do eat meat, and I process them, the whole thing. So I've gotten over that. But for those that haven't and might want to desire meat but don't want to kill the animal, what about just using stem cells to produce meat, just grow meat in a Petri dish? So the question's always been for me, Ben, you're a vegetarian.
I'm vegetarian.
Let's say you have a little bit of skin on your lip and you bite it and you consume it accidentally. We wouldn't call that not vegetarian because it came from
self-cannibalism.
Yeah,
I
but
don't know.
Technically we just don't call it that because
you just don't call it
cells
anything.
Fall off and
call
then say you're cheap
owie.
All the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happens if we just take some of your tissue and just regrow it and grow some steak of Ben and then Ben eats it?
No,
then
you're not one's talking about growing human stem cells for meat.
Oh, I always thought it was stem cells. That's
not
right. The study is not
cells.
About stem cells for human consumption.
That's horrible.
But the point is that if you wanted to go that way and be an actual vegetarian and still eat meat, you technically could.
That's pretty kinky,
it's pretty disgusting, I know.
That's
any case.
I don't know about that. There's a big egg factor
it's
in there.
Already
it
possible
like
to make meat
cells,
from stem cells. To prove it, Mark Post, a professor of tissue engineering at the Maastricht University in the Netherlands, presented the first lab-grown hamburger in 2013. We did cover this on GeekSpeak, and he's making more endeavors to do so. So just letting you know. Alternate meat consumption and production as possible.
That's a weird. So it's lab meat.
It's lab meat. It's Petri dish meat. What I've heard is that it tastes disgusting.
Stem cells from what?
Oh, cow. Yeah, both.
It is cow.
Yeah, because that's more.
It doesn't taste
than
good.
Ben.
No, are you calling me a cow?
The problem is that as any
just about muscle tissue.
I mean, the truth is there's actually a lot of process involved in making meat consumption. You've got to cure it. You've got to do a bunch of things. But growing it in a Petri dish, you just kind of get. Unstructured liver inconsistency. Exactly. So it's not, it's possible, but not something you want to do. Exactly.
Blah.
I'm not worried that I'm going to be accidentally and unintentionally buying stem cell meat.
No, definitely not. And I think that when you get into that point, it's kind of more disgusting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it is hopefully, one of the concepts around this is the moral promise of meat that is grown without a brain ever being involved or most likely a soul never being involved as well if you do it in a Petri dish. All right.
Yeah. Okay. Ew. I need some good news, Ben. Do you have some good news for me?
I got a quick one, which is CNN has a site called iReport where you can sign up and make an account and post some news, and it looks very similar to CNN. So somebody posted that an asteroid is going to wipe out all life on Earth in 2041, and everyone was like, huh, what? Where is
That's
this coming from?
Yeah.
Until they realized that, oh, this isn't CNN. This is CNN iReport. This is some schmo made an account. And
why is there a CNN iReport
that can happen on? Thanks, so Marcus575.
Like, this is really interesting, though, because I remember when we had some fires here in Santa Cruz a few years ago, and the reports were coming through Twitter feeds, right? Like, that was the great source of news, and then we were taking that and broadcasting on the radio as we confirmed it.
Right.
So it was a great way to pull in information. That's iReports, right? The concept that an individual might know a lot more about the scene.
But it can't look like CNN.com.
No, it's got to look like the
it's
source of
it look
actually
like
is.
iReports.
Absolutely.
All right, so lesson learned. One lesson that we've learned over the years is that it works for the people who rely on the programming to be the ones that pay for it. And that's what we're talking about now in these final few minutes of the show. It's Geek Speak on KUSP. I'm Bonnie Primsch with Lyle Troxell and Ben Jaffe. And you've done it. You've got to the end of the show without calling in your pledge or clicking the donate button. Congratulations. There's really only like 4 minutes left of the program, so now is the time to make your contribution to KUSP.
You know, you may be thinking to yourself that KUSP seems to be getting along fine without your pledge. And that's a risky assumption.
That's risky.
Although the Great Recession is mostly behind us,
probably,
its effects linger, yeah, hopefully. Past sources of philanthropic and business funding have not returned. They've dried up and they're not here. And we're increasingly looking to gifts from individuals, listeners like yourself, to make up the difference. So if you care about public radio, and you obviously do, and if you care about KUSP, well, you've been listening, you care. If you care about Geek Speak, well, you're still here on the program, so clearly you enjoy Geek Speak. We urge you to act now. Your pledge now will secure a bright future for KUSP.
So procrastination is part of the human condition, and that's why when fund drives come around, we say, oh, we'll make the pledge call tomorrow. Well, you're running out of tomorrows because the end of the drive is today. So it's nearly upon us. Make your procrastinator's pledge today. Now, go to our secure website, kusp.org.
You know, large companies know that a bad product launch or a bad PR can decimate them, just destroy them.
Yeah.
So the information they put out in their marketing is full of subtleties and couched in technobabble that's hard for the average person to parse. And we are here to help. We translate that geek speak into English. We laugh about it. What the large companies are really trying to hide, and we share with you what they are hiding.
And like so many things where a lot of money is at stake, news about technology and science lends itself to manipulation by people who don't have your best interests at heart. So public radio programs like GeekSpeak cut through the nonsense, and we try to give you the straight story. How much do you value science and tech news that's based in fact? Let us know by making your contribution at kusp.org.
An online pledge takes as little as 2 minutes if you have a fast internet connection. This small investment in your time right now will come back to you in the form of hours and hours of worldwide radio.
So that's it. Just a couple minutes left and four more people to hear from. Thank you for making your call now. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Dave Lawrence and is used with permission. And GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. So use our stuff any way you like. Just tell them the geeks say hi. This is Public Radio for the Central Coast, 889KUSP.org, live online at KUSP.org. To find out more about this or any episode of GeekSpeak, please visit GeekSpeak.org. This has been GeekSpeak for May 24th, 2014. And thank you for listening. Pledge your support now. Oh, it's May 31st. KUSP.org.